Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com chat room. If you want to cruise in there, just Google Vinnie Eastwood chat. It should come up in the search. Today, without further ado, I'm going to go straight to my guest because he's an extremely busy man and I want to usurp as much of his time as humanly possible. James Corbett from The Corbett Report. Welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Well, thank you for having me, and mission accomplished. You're already usurping my time.
Absolutely. I am the great usurper.
A great song. I love that song.
Well, thank you. In Tibet, I'm known as Usurper Tenzing. Never mind. New Zealand Sherpa Tenzing was the guy who helped Sir Edmund Hillary conquer Everest first.
Gotcha. Okay. I would never have guessed that in a million years.
Don't worry, we don't have a million years, we've only got 2 hours. So, first question, tell us a little bit about who you are, James, and what it is you do.
That is an existential question, isn't it? Well, I am James Corbett. I was born and raised in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, which is in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. Beautiful area, if you ever get a chance, go out there. And I spent, as I say, all my childhood there, and I went to university there, and then after university, I was looking for somewhere to go, so I went to Ireland, of all places, spent a year studying out there. After that, I was looking for something to do with my life, so I decided, why not waste another year? So I moved out to Japan, and I came out here to teach English, and it was originally just going to be for 1 year, but I ended up staying out here for 8 years. Because it's a beautiful place, and I love it. And I'm married to a Japanese wife now, who is, in fact, just as we speak, just up and about, up and about in the kitchen, so you might hear her in the background cluttering away. And I started the Corbett Report website about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 5 years ago. I don't remember how long, a long time ago. And that was really just as a response to all this type of information I was receiving through the internet that I had never seen in my life before, that was challenging my paradigm and busting through all of the, I guess, the dogma that I've had built up my entire life. And once I started to find out about some of this alternative information, I decided, why not share it? So here I am 5 years later, and I could never have imagined that I would have achieved the level of success that I already have. And I'm just absolutely thrilled and humbled to be able to do this for a living.
Yeah. Well, what was it that first set you off? Was it a particular conspiracy that you heard first, or did it all kind of come together?
That's a good question. And I guess certainly I can as long as I can remember, I've been interested in things like JFK and things like that. And I've always thought, well, there must be more to it than what we've been told. But I was never particularly interested in it, and it never particularly motivated me to do anything. I just thought it was an interesting field of study. But it was about 6 years ago now that I started watching YouTube for the first time. It was, I think, a year or so old by then, so it was already, everybody else had already jumped on that bandwagon. But I had only just moved into an apartment that had an internet connection, and it was the first time in years that I'd lived in a place that had an internet connection. So I was suddenly discovering YouTube and Google Video and all of these things where you could watch, you know, feature-length documentaries or 10-minute videos about pretty much any subject you could possibly think of. And so it was me watching things like The Daily Show and I don't know what other kind of mindless entertainment that I was watching, but in the related videos, I kept seeing related videos related to 9/11 truth. And a lot of them were ridiculous and silly about glowing orbs taking down the World Trade Center, etc., which was not my cup of tea. But there were other videos there that I started to see that were actually compelling. So I started to watch them more and more. Then I started to actively seek out those types of videos. And then I actually started trying to verify some of the information in them and finding that some of them were actually talking about things that were verifiable that I'd never heard before. And that was really, I think, the thing that started me down the rabbit hole. And before long, I was getting into all sorts of other areas that I now cover on the Corbett Report on a regular basis. But I think it was really 9/11 truth that was the gateway for me.
It is a gateway drug. It is the marijuana. It is the marijuana of conspiracies.
I guess so, but I've moved on to the heroin now. Metaphorically, that is, for the listeners out there.
So what's the real hard smack for you? Because I have actually had a very similar wake up when you start listening to radio or somebody shows you a documentary or something. You become awakened by the available media, and that is now the, I think, probably the most common way for people to wake themselves up is through the internet, through YouTube and things like that. Today, however, you understand that once you've become aware of all of these various eclectic conspiracies, that now you want harder stuff because that thrill is gone to a degree, almost like a drug addict.
It is an interesting analogy. Well, I can certainly see how that would play out with some people. With me, I think I was the exact opposite. Once I started finding some of this conspiracy type stuff, or whatever you want to call it or label it, I must admit it, when I started to find out about things like, I watched Century of the Self, the BBC documentary that was talking about people like Edward Bernays and how he manipulated public opinion to behind the scenes using, you know, Freudian psychology and liberated women by allowing them to smoke, etc., breaking that social taboo and all of those kinds of crazy things. And I started to look at the types of social engineering that was happening behind the scenes and all of this sort of stuff. And it was really busting down my paradigms in a big way. And I must admit, for a few months there, I was kind of floundering because I didn't know what to believe anymore or what to, you know, what I could use as some sort of bedrock truth. That I hadn't really hit bottom, I suppose, as it were, of the conspiracy. So I was casting out in all different directions and listening to basically anything. I didn't have, I guess, a filter at that point, which is a good thing, obviously. I mean, having an open mind to everything. And so I was listening to all sorts of information that was, I guess, pretty far out there for me personally these days. I don't think the type of stuff that I'd be interested in now, but I was casting all about. And then I started to find the type of information that I've gravitated towards, which is more focusing on, I suppose, the police state and eugenics and geopolitics. These are the types of issues that ultimately I've found myself to be interested in. And I think probably most so because they're the types of things that I can independently verify, and there are things I can actually kind of research in a way. There's a lot of stuff out there that's fascinating, but there's not much I can do with it from my own perspective. Yeah. I mean, I'm the kind of guy that's very analytical and very much looking for sort of documents and things that I can go off of. So there's a lot of things that I just don't tend to get into because it's mostly speculation. And as fascinating as it is, I'm just not interested in that kind of speculation.
I completely agree. I was standing outside with my friend the other night and we looked at the moon, you know, David Icke says the moon's artificial, right? Okay. Well, does that change the fact that we're sitting here under the moon? No.
I suppose not.
Does it change the tides? No.
No.
Does it actually change anything about our day-to-day life in any way, shape, or form?
No, but it's an interesting thesis to ponder, isn't it?
Yeah. See, now that's the whole point. Regardless of whether or not something's true, it can still be very interesting.
That's very true. I don't dispute that. And I have read the book, Who Built the Moon? And there are some very genuinely interesting aspects to that thesis and some of the mathematical ways that it does seem to suggest some sort of artificial nature to it. But again, that's the type of thing that I don't tend to cover because I don't really know what to do with that.
Well, yeah. And it's more to the point. I mean, you don't belong to NASA or anything like that. You're not an astronaut, are you, James? You and I aren't going to go there at any time soon. So in our practical world, it does not affect us. Police state, on the other hand, did you see a security camera today when you're walking down the street or whatever, ladies and gentlemen? That's police state. That does affect you.
Unfortunately so. But there's also the tendency for the alternative media to fall into the fear trap. Because the police state functions, I mean, the way that it functions is not necessarily having jackbooted thugs with big guns in your face at all times. It functions because we are aware of its existence and afraid of it, so that we will start to actually censor ourselves because we know they're watching, they're listening, you know, they're everywhere. And if we give into that fear...
And then they don't even need the watchers and listeners anymore because we watch and listen to ourselves.
That's it. That's the concept of the panopticon, and that's exactly what that's about. We don't know when we're being listened to or watched, so we act as if we always are. And when we start to do that self-censorship, they win automatically. So my message on the police state is not to give into the fear, and in fact, to speak up louder and harder, because the more we do that, the less able they are to use that as sort of the governing function of society.
Now, the governing function of society, I was having an argument with my friend about this. I say it's kind of banking. He says it's government. The reality is it's both, but he claims that government has a monopoly on force, and it's by an act of parliament that you can give banks the ability to issue your currency and hence control the government anyway. So I understand that. However, they're inexorably tied together to a point where you can't abolish one without the other, I feel.
I agree completely. It's a pretty circular argument, I guess. Chicken or egg, banking or government. I mean, they have arisen, and I think not as a contingency, I think as a necessity together in this age. As we saw, I guess, the fall of the absolute monarchies of the Middle Ages and the Dark Ages, and the rise of this need to legitimize some sort of ruling class, I think we saw the creation of the modern forms of government, democracy, and all of that, at the same time as we saw the rise of modern central banking and all of that. So I don't think that's unrelated, and it would require, you know, hundreds of hours of exposition to get into exactly how that happened. But absolutely, I think there's no doubt that the banksters require the big stick of government in order to exist, and the government requires the banking infrastructure in order to basically fund its existence. So it isn't it's not even a parasitic relationship or anything like that. I think it's just a necessary. They are two sides of the same coin, and I guess ultimately my job would be to make sure that both of them fade away in the future. But we'll see if that ever happens.
They form a symbiote circle, and the thing about it is, the only reason why they're there is because in some case we need them. Like, I can't issue my own currency. I need somebody else who's got a currency in circulation in order to be able to go trade, buy food, whatever. So I'm dependent on that currency issuer. However, if I was doing trade on my own back or something like that, it would be remarkably inconvenient, remarkably inefficient, and there wouldn't be the liquidity that's available for the functioning of the economy that cash and currency gives you. You know, what am I going to do? Walk down to the grocery store with a mattress and ask them, "Hey, can I have a couple of apples, some bananas, and a cabbage and stuff like that?" And I'll give you, the grocer, this mattress. No, it's stupid. right? Some people have even thought about bringing a system back like that. What I think is kind of like the current system that we've got here actually isn't really that bad to live in, kind of thing. You know, we're allowed to go out and buy whatever we want, eat whatever we want. The problem is it's really, really damaging and sick to everybody who participates in it for any extended period of time and isn't capable of protecting themselves from it, whether it's the psychological damage or the poisons inherent in the products that we're all consuming, and that includes the media. All of these things are contrived to poison us in every single way, and the only reason they can is because we still need them to survive. If we're capable of taking away survival from that government and banking and military-industrial complex cartel, just being able to feed ourselves, electricity and energy, you know, petrol, whatever, we wouldn't need them anymore. And there'd be very little need for government. And on top of that, people would ask, okay, well, if you didn't have a government, what about, you know, if there's a fire or what if there's a crime or whatever? Well, excuse me, way back in the day, and in fact, even still today, people have volunteer fire services. People have normal jobs and stuff like that, except when the alarm goes off around the town, they run down to the station and get out there and put the fire out. Hello? It works. Same with the sheriffs and their ability to deputize and rustle up posses. If people are armed, they don't need a cop to protect them because they don't have to reach for a phone in order to hope that somebody will come and save them if an assailant's coming through their front door. So you eliminate the need for most things. And perhaps in cases there might be speciality needs, like high-density population areas where you do need a professional full-time police force, say New York and things like that. But rural areas, they don't need any of that kind of government. They don't need any intervention. And I think that's the reason why, basically, the government's hustling real hard to get people out of those rural areas so that they can let them basically all go back to nature under Agenda 21.
Unfortunately, the point of the trend towards urbanization and the fact that now the majority of the world's population live in big cities, I think there is an agenda behind that. And it's not necessarily, again, that there's someone with a gun pointing at people's heads telling them to move to the city, but we have been shunted off into this urban society. And if you look back at people like Thomas Jefferson writing a couple hundred years ago, he was basically writing about how urbanization would be the end of America as it was supposed to be. And it looks like that's basically the case.
Yep, and I talk to people who live out in rural areas all the time, and they all enjoy their freedom. We'll be right back after the break. The Vinnie Eastwood Show.com with James Corbett from The Corbett Report. Jamming a big finger. I wanna jam it with you. Face of the New World Order scumbaggery. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you will go friggin' nuts. And now joining us, including the webcam for those of you who are lucky enough to watch it on YouTube, is James Corbett back from the Corbett Report in Japan. And I kind of also wanted to delve into that idea, because I've talked to Benjamin Fulford on the day of the quake, and I don't know, what is your perspective being on in Japan with the Fukushima and the earthquake and all of that kind of stuff? I mean, you were there when it happened, weren't you?
I was, actually. Weirdly enough, I was actually preparing to go back to Canada for a week, so I left on March 12th. And I didn't get back till the 20th or so, about there. So I was actually in Canada when all of the Fukushima crisis started happening. But I was here for the earthquake way on the other side of the main island. So I didn't feel anything over here, obviously. Didn't know anything. The first I heard about it was checked on the internet. I saw some of the news reports. So it didn't really affect us directly like that. But over the last year and a half, we've seen the economic effects starting to spread out over Japan, and also the electricity and the energy grid was being shut on in various degrees. Certainly the eastern part of the main island here was greatly affected. And last summer they were having rolling blackouts and that type of thing because of the lack of electricity. Over on this side of the main island, we've just tried to conserve energy in various ways. So restaurants would dim their lights during the daytime if they could light naturally and that kind of thing. So it's affected us in different ways, but overly, because it doesn't really directly affect our everyday lives. So out of sight, out of mind. And most of the people you talk to here on the street don't care. They're packing the sushi restaurants, despite the fact that the Pacific has been greatly radiated by the radiation that's spilled out there. 90% of the radiation from Fukushima went into the ocean. And they're finding radioactive fish that are basically radioactive enough that you would get 0.4 millisieverts of radiation from eating 1 kilogram of fish, which is a pretty substantial amount. The Fukushima fish is going back on sale in the Tokyo fish markets. So they're just trying to go for business as usual. And unfortunately, a lot of the Japanese public are okay with that. But there is a growing protest movement here against nuclear power, which I think is interesting, if for no other reason than it's a large-scale protest movement that's happening here in Japan, which is known for its political complacency. So we'll have to see how this transpires, but it should be at the very least an interesting several months ahead for the Japanese people.
Well, you know, Hal, it's interesting you say that Japan's known for its political complacency. Can I ask you something? Can you think of anything off the top of your head in an advanced culture where people aren't politically complacent?
Well, that's a good question. Absolutely. And I don't mean to cast aspersions on the Japanese people specifically, but having lived here for 8 years now, I can say that the number of times I've been engaged in a random political conversation about anything in mixed company with anyone has been, I want to say zero. There might have been one or two along the way, but it is just not even discussed here in polite mixed company. And back home in Canada, at the very least, people would be willing to talk about politics and things like that. So, there is an awful lot of complacency everywhere in the world, but I think especially so here, where rocking the boat or expressing an opinion is sort of frowned upon.
That's a very cultural thing, isn't it?
It is. And I think it's definitely related to the feudal nature of the history of Japan, just living in that feudalist mindset for so long with the daimyo and the samurai, and everybody else was kind of under their boot. And a great illustration of that would come from some of Kurosawa's film, the Hidden Fortress or the Seven Samurai, which I suggest people watch not only because it was George Lucas' inspiration for Star Wars, but because Kurosawa was a brilliant filmmaker, and because I think it goes to show the sort of the mindset of a lot of the people in Japan who had to live in that society where they were basically the bottom of the bottom of the bottom of the bottom rung of society, and they had to bow down every time one of the samurai or whoever passed by. And that has just been so ingrained in society, and really not much has fundamentally changed. I mean, the emperor is no longer the divine being on earth that people believed he was, half a century ago. But there's still the mindset that everybody is at the bottom of society, and there are those who are above, and they are just naturally so. And so I think you saw the feudal system transition into the new corporate monopolist fascistic system very easily here, where families that were the landowners, etc., in the old feudal society just became the owners of the big corporations now.
So it's just basically neo-feudalism. And, basically, think the mindset of Americans. You know how Americans currently, they speak out against injustice, they're opinionated, and they're politically involved in a lot of cases and what have you. Hope, okay, is going downwards. Imagine 500 years from now in a post-Barack Obama neo-feudalistic America. I think it would be a very, very similar culture.
I think you're right. Certainly, Americans are more engaged and more opinionated and more willing to talk openly about these subjects. But because they're operating in sort of the false paradigm that's put out of people, the false spectrum, the buffet between the poison pill or the other flavor of poison pill. I mean, it's not really a choice at all. So people can be squabbling over what amounts to absolutely nothing at all. So everyone will be talking about legitimate rape or whatever the meme is for this week that has nothing to do with, you know, how the majority of people are living their day-to-day lives. But it can be that thing that they squabble over and fight like dogs fighting over a toy or something that ultimately comes to no consequence whatsoever. So I think there has been a very carefully crafted and engineered system put into place to allow people to squabble over things of no significance. And so they invest all their time and energy in that. So kind of a different system than what's here in Japan, but ultimately amounts to a very similar system in which people tend to go along with whatever the prevailing norm is. And in this case, in the American case, it's just, you know, team A, team B, team blue, team red, whatever, you know, label they want to stick on it. It's the same thing.
I'm reminded of what just happened 2 days in New Zealand. Now, James, they're selling off our power electricity companies, right, to the New World Order, World Bank-affiliated scum, as you do, just like happened in Australia, doubled, tripled their power prices. They're doing that here. And right in the middle, when it's being challenged in court and about to be thrown back, they say, we're going to legalize gay marriage. And then they say, we're going to drug test every single person who's on it, who's getting a government benefit. And suddenly nobody's talking about the energy companies. It's all gay marriage, this, drug testing, that. Beautiful.
Just throw in an abortion debate and you've hit the trifecta, I think.
It matters not what the media are covering. And this is what has been my determination for quite some time, is that the truth is out there. And it's being said in meetings all the time in front of the public and all of that. But it is not reported, okay? You know, I could be at all of these different big business meetings provided I paid the credit card charges in order to join these big fancy organizations and wore an appropriate suit and blah, blah, blah. I could go into all these scumbag confabs and report what their agenda is. For instance, John Key, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, who's a former Wall Street Federal Reserve Bank, 2 years head of the European Bond and Derivatives Trade, one of the people most directly responsible for the fall of Ireland's economy. He said to a big business group that he takes a moderate approach to governing, whereas you take many, many small, moderate, seemingly insignificant steps that in the end add up to a lot. And you know what that said to me? He said that openly to a whole bunch of business people. And that's exactly how David Icke described the totalitarian tiptoe.
Exactly. Or we can look to Fabian socialism from the early 20th century. And you had such progenitors as G.B. Shaw and others who were avowed eugenicists who wanted to bring about a totalitarian society of their own idea and their own making, a liberal progressive totalitarian society. But how do you get from here to there? Bit by bit by bit by bit, step by step by step by step, you gradually steep people into the system. And I think we can see this even in our own daily lives. It sometimes strikes me again with renewed vigor. Well, the other day I was sitting there on my little iPhone slave device, which I do have, I must admit, I'm not going to deny it. In fact, it's right here for those of you watching the video. And I was sitting there, you know, just checking my email, and I was outside, I was out at in a public place checking my email, and I thought, you know, 10 years ago even 10 years ago I would have been reading a book or writing or doing something, I don't know, reading a newspaper or talking to someone, but now I'm just checking my email here on this phone, and I'm at the point where it would be weird for me not to be able to check my email when I'm out on the street or, you know, doing my day-to-day routine. And that is, I mean, I really had to think about it. Even for me, who grew up in an internetless world in my childhood, it has now become so much a part of my everyday life that I already take it for granted. And imagine the next generation that's growing up that's never known a world without the internet and without these devices. I mean, it's no way that they can ever escape that type of technological grid. So we absolutely, as human beings, can be engineered to just accept whatever fabric of reality is woven around us. And that is unfortunately to our detriment, because it can be used to really craft a society that we don't want. But again, bit by bit by bit, we can be led into it.
it is true that if you want a big plan to come to fruition, don't give away the whole game plan in the first act of your play or your movie or whatever meme or fabrication you wish to apply this analogy to. Secrecy, therefore, is the only way that you can actually make it happen. And the media is supposed to stop that secrecy, that kind of secrecy, from occurring by exposing, investigating, much in the same way a police officer would investigate a criminal. But now it turns out that the criminals now own the media and the police. So anybody who would investigate them becomes unemployed.
It can happen. And again, that goes back to what we were saying earlier about the police state and how it functions best when we're scared of it. So, so again, I think there's the tendency for people to look at stories like the, oh my God, if I post anything on Facebook, then they're going to come and get me too. So, again, people can start to self-censor because of that. But you're right, it does function on secrecy at a certain level. But as you said, so many of these meetings are open and things are openly discussed. They're just not reported on, which I think is an important part of the system as well, because it defies the credulity of people that this type of thing can be going on in the open, and yet we're not hearing about it. I mean, clearly, if there were important decisions being made, we'd be hearing about it. Therefore, there are no important decisions being made, and you're a conspiracy theorist if you talk about it. And that's the type of mindset that a lot of people are stuck in. So so I guess I see it as one of my duties. The thing that I try to do is try to bring those things that are completely open and on the table and just openly discussed to the attention of people who otherwise wouldn't hear about them while they're, you know, following whatever the latest celebrity scandal is. So so absolutely, we can and are little is not necessarily through a system of utter secrecy and total things going on behind the scenes, but sometimes just by things that are openly there that we just don't know about.
That's the whole thing. You walk around and imagine you could point to an object in any part of your room, just the room that you're in, just this one room, and imagine you knew the ins and outs of those objects, like where did the wood on that picture frame come from, so on and so forth. And what it baffles me is that I'm surrounded with things that I don't understand. I don't understand how they work. Like this Apple Mac Magic Mouse that I have, for example, that has no mouse wheel. I don't know how that works. If it broke, I wouldn't be able to fix it. I would have no idea. This magazine here, the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine, and all these qualified people in here that are doctors and stuff have been researching stuff that'll kill you for goodness knows how many generations. I have no idea how they know what they know or how it works. It inherently makes the whole world very confusing and very scary if you have a lack of information. And it means that you have to actually invest time and effort and humility, most of all, into your investigations, to be able to admit that you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what it is that you're doing.
It's a very good point. To quote the Insane Clown Posse, magnets, how do they work? Which, I mean, they took a lot of flack for that, but it's true. How many people know how magnets work? I mean, it's a force of nature, so I'm not sure we really have a answer to that even, but it's an interesting thing to think about. But no, I understand exactly what you're saying. I mean, it's something that like Joe Rogan and others have talked about. You know, he's got a microphone doing his stand-up comedy and he says, what is in here? How does this work? How does this make my voice loud? I don't know. Stranded in the woods for a million years, I'd never be able to, you know, reconstruct a microphone or anything like that. Any of this technology that we all take for granted on a day-to-day basis. And it's true. And it goes to show how much of the world has been engineered around us, and yet we take it for granted unless we do something like that and force ourselves to see, hey, I don't know how any of this works. Maybe I should actually start investigating this world.
You do have a good point, too. I'm a very special guest, James Corbett from The Corbett Report. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, broadcasting on AMFM stations across America and around the world, as well as all the fabulous internet stations that we have, and the rebroadcasters down here in New Zealand that replay the show between midnight and 2 a.m. in the South Island, when all the conspiracy theorists are still awake, and also Rush FM in Hamilton about 6 p.m. when you should be watching the mainstream news, you naughty people, instead you listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. James Corbett from The Corbett Report is my guest. Final segment with you today, and in the next hour, ladies and gentlemen, we've got upcoming New World Order rapper Jay Soli, one of my personal favorites. Final question on people is about self-censorship, and maybe you're kind of one of the reasonable people that might actually give a decent answer to this thing, because most people don't hold back anything because they kind of don't care anymore, but you've kind of got this this whole credible type element to your work, where it seems to be well researched, well thought out, backed up with evidence and no equivocations. It's just, this is it. And this is the evidence for it, and you can't add argument to it, but you can add extra information onto the side that supports it, kind of thing. That's the kind of only argument I've ever seen you give. It's quite extraordinary. So in the terms of self-censorship, we all do it for one reason or another. We think that people might not accept what we've got to say. They might think we're a little bit crazy for saying it, or whatever. So if there's anything that you might not normally say on air for fear that you might be judged or not comprehended entirely or whatever of a personal nature, this is the place where I like to give particularly activists and media commentators the opportunity to say it.
Well, you've blown my my humorous and silly answer right out of the water, because I was going to talk about my favorite flavor of ice cream or something, but now I feel like I have to actually do something serious. That's an excellent question, and I certainly understand what you're saying, but in my case, it's something that I've reflected on quite a bit, is when I started doing the Corbett Report, it was not something that any of my peers or any of my friends or anyone that I knew was actually interested in this information. And I didn't have any contacts over the internet with people who were interested in this information. I just started the website because I just wanted to start doing this, to start spreading the information. And when I started in 2007, certainly it was a rising tide of this type of information, but it was still, I think, at a lower state than it is today. Right now, it's not so uncommon to hear this type of talk on the internet at any rate. And there's a lot of websites out there that are doing it, and a lot of radio shows like yours and others that are helping to inform people. And that's definitely to the good. But when I started in 2007, it was not, I think, as common as it is today. And there was a lot less of at least the type of alternative media that I'm interested in on the internet. So at the time, I certainly was not doing it to become popular or to win any brownie points or anything of that sort. It was just something that I did, and I expected a lot of flack, and I suppose to a certain extent I got a lot of flack on YouTube and things at the beginning. Maybe not so much, because people tend to self-select in what they're looking for, but certainly I there was pushback from people, and I saw that as a good, healthy thing. If I'm not pushing people's buttons and getting them to react to this type of information, then there's probably something wrong with them or with me. So I always thought that that was a healthy thing. In those intervening 5 years, there have been times when I've seen the amount of criticism and flack that I'm getting go down. And unlike most people, I would say that's almost a worrying thing for me, because again, that shows that maybe I'm just preaching to the choir. Maybe I'm not going far enough behind enemy lines to information to people who otherwise wouldn't be getting it. So I think I'm quite kind of the opposite of a lot of people, that not only do I not, or try not to self-censor with my viewpoints, for me, it's not a calculation about whether or not this or that thing that I say how will people think about this? And maybe it's something I should do more often, because I have subscriptions to my website and stuff. So if I say something really controversial, maybe people will stop subscribing. But because of that place where I have always thought that conflict and criticism is a good thing, I honestly don't try, or I don't consciously, at any rate, self-censor with what I'm saying in my viewpoints. And sometimes I will put out things that are unpopular among the conspiracy crowd, if you want to use that label. So, for example, in my podcast, I have a series called, what's it called? Patriot Mythology. And I've done a couple of things on that now, talking about against ideas such as Larry Silverstein's Pullet comment. I don't think that that's important. I think it's kind of a non-issue. And I go over reasons for that and things like that. And obviously, I get a lot of feedback and kickback on that from people out in the audience who have for years been advocating for Larry Silverstein's Pullet comment as being one of the linchpins of 9/11, et cetera, et cetera. So I have certainly taken flack for some of the things I've said, but it's not going to stop me seeing them, and it's certainly not going to stop me from doing more of that in the future. I think it's important to constantly be questioning our assumptions. So this is not a good answer because I'm not giving you anything in particular, but
Don't worry, James. It's a fishing question for a reason, and sometimes when you cast your line, you catch nothing, but you do get to drink beer and have a conversation while you wait to catch nothing.
That's right, and I gave you an ample opportunity to do that, didn't I? Well, yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I will be better prepared for next time, though.
Well, I don't know. I don't believe in being prepared because at the end of the day, I believe nobody really can be, particularly when it comes to conversations of a random nature, such as the Vinnie Eastwood Show, where we're just meant to have some fun and what have you. Has there been anything of particular delight to you in the past few years since you've been doing any of this? Anything that really just made you just laugh your ass off?
Yes. Yes, there have. Let me think of what in particular. There's been a lot of things. I put together a video recently that I can't say the title of because it contains a naughty four-letter word that is inappropriate for an FCC-compliant radio show like this. But it's, let's say, stuff conspiracy, stuff government says. And in that video, just some of the most ridiculous things that I could find that politicians have said in the last several years, because I think it's important to laugh at these people as much as fear them. They are pathetic. They are laughable. They say ridiculous things that are just so far out there that if they were said in any other context, people would be laughing at them. But because they're the government, it's supposed to be taken seriously. Oh, pizza is a vegetable now. Oh, okay. Tell me more, Mr. Government. There's a lot of things like that out there, and I'm sorry if I quite think of all of them off the top of my head, but I would direct people to that video for at least some of the ideas, because it is stupid, it is laughable, and we do have to laugh at it at the very least as much as we are concerned or worried about it, because once again, our power is in not fearing them, not taking them too seriously, and not quaking in our boots, waiting for us to be rounded up into FEMA camps or whatever the local New Zealand. I think we have to absolutely stand our ground and be confident that we are in the right. And as people in the right, we can laugh at people who are in the wrong and doing things that are just lamentable and regrettable, but laughable as well.
A lot of people have told me that they don't like just people in general anymore because they're too stupid. And I said to them, well, look, man, you're looking at it all wrong. Do you have any idea how, you know, they're incredibly entertaining. Anybody who's doing stupid stuff all the time, even if it's you doing the stupid stuff, getting drunk and falling down, whatever it is, we all do stupid stuff all the time. That's actually what life should really be about, is about falling over and not just laughing and not laughing at the other people that fall over, but also laughing at yourself when you fall over. Because at the end of the day, this is a very, very harsh reality that we have to deal with as quote-unquote conspiracy theorists, which I believe is just somebody who believes that a group of powerful people who have a lot of influence use their power to gain more influence. That's
what a ridiculous idea.
And a coincidence theorist is somebody who thinks it all happens by pure coincidence, everything, everywhere, at all times, is not the result of any planning of any kind. It's all coincidence.
No, that's perfectly reasonable. Oh, absolutely. Coincidence.
Okay. So you're either one or the other. You're either a conspiracy theorist or a coincidence theorist. You know, make your pick. You're either choosing sanity and reason, or you're choosing complete and utter blindness. Okay? If you think that's going to work out for you, just blindfold yourself and walk along the edge of a cliff one day, you know?
Yeah. This is just a random picture of nothing, but connect those dots, and wow, it actually makes sense. And that was something that I noticed when I first started getting into this. It was making sense of things that had never made sense to me before. It was like, oh, people are always voting the left or the right into power, and yet nothing ever changes. Why is this? And suddenly, it was like this whole door opened, and like, oh, okay, it's the same thing. Well, why didn't anyone?
They were both the same group of scumbags that didn't know what the heck that they were talking about and just made crap up as they went along. Oh, it makes so much sense now. It's kind of like if you recognize what a psychopath is and how a psychopath thinks, suddenly all government policy starts to make a lot more sense.
Unfortunately so, yeah. And I've interviewed a few people on psychopathy on the work that I've done, and it's those things that when you start to put that into the puzzle, yeah, it really does make sense of a lot of things that otherwise would be completely inscrutable.
Indeed. Well, James, thank you very much for giving us an hour of your very, very, very valuable time. And I'll look forward to coming on your show and letting your audience know about the situations that we have on many, many different scumbaggery operations in New Zealand. And your website is thecorbettreport.com, I think.
Or even corbettreport.com might be simpler. But either will get you there.
Yep, everybody, CorbettReport.com. You want some credible information and a very lovely guy who has a kind of, kind of like an amicable Canadian feel to him. All right, thanks, James. We'll see you again sometime.
Thank you.
Disinformation to fact check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest today in the second hour is Jay Soley, just by himself, so it's Jay Soley. Jay, welcome to the program.
Hey, Vinny, I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, dude. What's been happening in your neck of the woods, man?
Man, a lot since last time. I was on your show, I think, a year and a half ago, and yeah, I've expanded a lot since then. I just released a new album called So Ill. That's out now on iTunes and Spotify. It's pretty politically charged again. But I've grown a little bit too since my previous material. I'll talk about that in a little bit, but yeah, it features Beast 1333, Infinite Mind, from Templars of Hip Hop in New York. I've got Two Fresh Music from Los Angeles, Smash Bash Music from Dallas. We got Dutch Pot on multiple beats from the United Kingdom. So, yeah, we're doing it pretty big, man.
My goodness. Well, hey, and can I ask, what kind of methodology do you follow? I know that there's a lot of hip-hop artists out there, a lot of wannabes, but what's the difference between the wannabes and actually just you, who's actually going out there and just making sure the music's at least made, at least recorded, at least released?
There's a lot of obstacles that that I think every artist face, and it's just a matter of endurance, I think, is the bottom line at the end of the day. I learned that from KRS-One, who's a veteran that's been around for a long time. And, you know, he said, out-endure people. Just keep going, even when you feel weak, even when that big obstacle comes, just keep going. And, you know, there were times where I was putting out less material, for instance, and you know, people are like, "What's the deal? You still doing your thing?" And it's like, "Yeah, I'm just kind of rebuilding right now." And so I think that's the bottom line, is endurance. And another thing is a message too, because when I first started in hip hop, it actually was just for fun. I was just freestyling and not necessarily on any particular topic, and that faded out really quickly. And if it wasn't for making music with the political conscious message, there's no doubt in my mind that I would have faded out much sooner.
Is that kind of like, I don't know, sort of like how a doctor would get sick and instead of sitting there doing nothing, he uses what he knows about his own body to fix himself?
Yeah, I think that's a good metaphor, man. Yeah, definitely. So, I just try to, it's almost like I feel like I got it from a different source, almost kind of told me to, hey, like, step it up and use your, use the talent that you were given for a purpose instead of just trying to gain resources or anything like that, personal gain. Just try to better people around you, and it's a give and take. So I do give up some things by having like a political message. People within the industry definitely look at that and say, okay, we don't even want to touch that because they're just a business, and they think that, you know, that they're going to lose money. So, you know, in a way, artists suffer for that, but then at the same time, I think in the long run, the longevity is there because the fan base isn't just jumping on you and just there for the moment for one hit song that they got stuck in their head and then they're off to the next fad. It's more like these, you know, the fan base really appreciates that you're being real and staying true to yourself and helping a cause that they strongly believe in as well. And so I think it returns to you to an artist who is sticking to their truth and trying to do something bigger than gaining money or fame or something superficial.
I think your speakers are getting a little bit of feedback there. I think it's about vision. You know, like a film director, for instance, there's these great actors in that, and they say that the one thing they look for in a good director is vision. If that person knows exactly what they want and they've got the drive and determination to accomplish it, that's the kind of person you want to be working with, and that's the kind of person you want to be.
Oh, no question. Yeah, I think without visualization, yeah. Literally, you said it. I wouldn't have been able to create, I think, and keep moving forward And I did. I mean, I can remember like 3 years ago, I was visualizing things that I wanted, and they slowly, as long as I have inspired action, it mixed with the vision and the desire, and you know, you mix those together, and it really does. It manifests slowly sometimes, but it does. So, yeah, I think you said it. Vision is very important.
And another thing that occurs to me is sometimes you don't know where it comes from.
Definitely. Yeah.
You ever done a song and maybe the people around you are like, dude, and you listen to the song and you're like, whoa, did that come from me?
Yeah. Well, what's funny is, I mean, sometimes I'll take a really long time to write a song, and it'll turn out like, okay, you know, people like it or whatever. And then sometimes I'll just write a song so fast. I mean, it'll just almost like, it's like it just flowed right through me without even, I was just kind of like a middleman from the universe to the paper or something like that. Or even like a freestyle type of thing where, I'll do it so fast that I kind of don't trust it. I'm like, I did that too fast. It's not going to be good. And those are the songs that sometimes people end up liking the most, surprisingly. So it is the creation process can be really interesting in that way. Definitely. Yeah.
Well, this is another thing that I've been wondering, Jay, and I wonder if you might be sharing my theory. Do you think that maybe there is some kind of an extrasensory web that people who are artistic in almost any way are capable of picking up on? And it's not necessarily their creativity in and of itself. It's their ability to receive the messages that are being sent to them.
I think it's possible. I mean, I don't want to sound like...
But there's a hell of a lot of work as well that's involved and just very straightforward, I'm here in the moment. But it's just sometimes...
Oh, yeah, no question, yeah. I mean, there's things, I guess the best way I could connect to what you just said is ever since I was a kid, just even, like, drawing or something like that, people were just kind of like, wow, that's amazing, I guess. But it didn't seem like, I kind of just had this feeling that everyone could do it. It just didn't feel like it was something, the art side of it. It felt like something that everyone could do, like not, but yeah, I think you might be right. It could be something along those lines. But it's someone who said, like in art, I think it was like maybe Mozart or a classic artist said that genius is having the most intense presence mixed with the most intense concentration. And I think those two are kind of hard to merge, because when you have that intense, creative, almost like feminine quality, it's very all over the place, and it's hard to harness and focus that energy into creating something like a song that would really, it takes focus and concentration, and you really have to work and develop the craft in order to make something that people really look at and critique as a serious piece of art in hip hop, because there are so many good artists out there. Every day almost I feel like I discover someone else who I'm like, wow, that is really good. And they don't get a lot of mainstream attention, obviously. But These underground artists, there's some very lyrical people out there. You have to have that presence, definitely. And you have to mix that flow, that energy that is just right there on the spot with hard work. And it can be, I think that might be one of the most challenging things.
There's a spiritual side to it, isn't it? And I was just thinking about this as well. You know how some people are like kind of sort of a bit psychic, or they might be able to see ghosts or something like that, or some people are incredibly intelligent, like they've got some amazing talent, etc. And it's funny when you've got a lot of talent, there's this inherent almost universal obligation, you know, like a pressure that's on you, and many people instead of feeling that pressure and then allowing it to push them forward, they instead try to resist it by doing nothing and just getting themselves ridiculously wasted and then telling everybody else that they're just stupid because I'm better than you, I can do better than you with nothing, blah, 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 while they're sitting there squandering every ability that they had.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I think the people who hate the most are those who had the potential to do something great and for whatever reason didn't follow that path. And they feel it deep down, I think, and it makes for some resentment and anger it's a manifestation of something they could have been. But I think that exists within everyone. I have a theory that everyone, if they truly followed their heart and what they really want to do, like, you know, I think everyone has something that they're good at, and it's hard to follow that because we're so conditioned into with the education system and just everyone is conditioned in some way, shape or form. And it's hard to follow that sometimes because you want to be what so many other people want you to be. And it can be scary to take that leap of faith, to take that first step when you can't see the whole staircase. But it's funny, once you start just going on that path and just carving your own path and just saying, this is what I'm good at, this is what I want to do, I don't care what you want me to be, this, I'm my own person, the staircase is revealed to you one step at a time, and things start flowing with you, and, you know, resources start appearing for you, and it's almost like you're not striving anymore. It's kind of like things are just happening for you. So I think it's really important that people stick to their own personal truth and follow their heart, man.
Is it like a rock in a river or a leaf on a stream? If you're trying to fight against the current, let's say, I don't know, have you ever seen that footage of people who are being washed away by those big flood canals that they've got in LA there?
Yeah.
You know, that rescue footage? That's what people are actually doing their whole life. The person who's in that canal, who's just sitting there struggling against the tide and what have you, hoping that they don't get washed away, eventually gets tired and washes away anyway. The other person, on the other hand, rides it and then coasts very closely to the side and just walks off as if nothing ever happened, right? It's too remarkable. And this is what I'm talking about. The universe, I don't care what it is. I'm not New Agey. I'm not religious. I'm nothing and I'm everything at the same time. You know what I'm saying? Depending on the time frame and my frame of mind. In fact, that's a good lyric there. I'm nothing and I'm everything, depending on the time frame and my frame of mind.
Yeah, I'll give you credit for that one.
But anyway, the whole point of it is, if you're trying to resist what you're being pushed to do, it's going to be a lot more difficult.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's been my motto recently, is just let go. Just let go and just flow, because, you know, I did I used to have like a white knuckle grip on things, and I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna control it in any way I can, and I'm just gonna fight until I get what I, you know, what is needed or something like that, and the universe responds accordingly. It's like, okay, it humbles you. It's like, you're not in control. I don't care how hard you fight, you are not going to control circumstances. You just let go, and the flow of the universe will take you down the correct path. And not to mention how much easier and how much lighter and successful and carefree it is when you just let go and just let things happen. Definitely.
Yeah, kind of like skydiving. Yeah, you're worried that you might hit the ground, but gosh dang, falling freely through space at 200 miles an hour feels exhilarating.
Oh, yeah.
after the break with Jay Soley on AmericanFreedomRadio.com.
Accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, test tube babies and shipping contract orders. Oh, wait, they're the same thing. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, my very special guest is an artist of some note. Well, I don't know. Hey, are you actually starting to get really big, Jay? Because when I heard you over a year ago, you had good contacts with some other really, really fabulous hip-hop artists and indeed some that even put me on to you and vice versa. And I presume that social network of you with other artists of similar mind has grown, yeah?
It has, yeah. I mean, things are happening right now, I feel like. And, yeah, I think it also goes back to kind of like a change that almost happened within myself, more than externally, honestly. And, it kind of goes back to what we were just talking about, you know, I kind of just let go and things really started picking up more. You know, I'm getting more shows. I've got, you know, the album that just came out, and gaining new listeners every day. And, so yeah, I feel good about it, man. And, but you know, that's not the aim necessarily for me either. You know, if I can just create and there's people listening, I'm going to be doing it for the rest of my life. So I'm just really happy and grateful to be doing that.
Yeah. Well, hold on a second. Gratitude is something that's very lacking in today's society, don't you think? People are very, very ungrateful for what they've been given and blah, 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 blah. Right.
Oh, definitely, yeah, and I think it's one of the major keys to finding enlightenment or whatever you want to call it. I think you have to give thanks and you get more of whatever you give thanks for, I think. And even giving thanks, like just the first word giving is also really important. When I feel in my own personal life, when I give, the more I give, the more it's returned. It's like a mirror system. It's kind of like, it resembles unity. It resembles oneness. 'Cause if you're just giving freely, it means it's letting the universe know that you are one with everything. You're not hoarding things. You're not cutting yourself off from, the abundance that is reality. So yeah, I think it goes hand in hand with gratitude. Just you know, if you and it's more, you can start with just saying thank you without even feeling anything, and I think you start to see results. And but what I've learned is that gratitude actually is it's something actually tangible. It's actually an energy that that you can feel and genuinely feel that gratitude. And I think amazing things can happen when you do that.
Well, is that because people are, they're connectors for each other, kind of like a power socket and a power input, you know, they go together, or like a man and a woman fit together in the reproductive sense of the word. And the way that we come together in our minds, in our persons, with our touching is actually through that energy of gratitude to a degree. Like, I'm grateful to be here with you right now, Jay, to be talking to you and having a conversation that actually means something instead of talking with some douchebag real estate agent about crap that doesn't matter at all.
I feel the same way. I'm very grateful to be here talking with you as well, Vinny. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, see, and as a direct result of the reciprocal gratitude that we have for just being able to talk to each other, you've noticed that the conversation has actually gone in very deep and meaningful and what we would call actually productive and insightful places. That's what I find happens is when you're fracking happy to be where you are, doing what you're doing, you actually accomplish stuff that you really love to see the results of.
Yeah, that's funny how that works too. It's like we just bring that up and it kind of goes down into that avenue and it opens up into other things, and it's just that frequency itself is actually delivering. Yeah, it's funny how that presence works.
Yeah. Kind of like the Dark Lord of the Sith has also felt my presence. Now, and again, there is always a lot of backlash for being a truther and what have you. I was wondering, has that happened to you at gigs and stuff like that, where you'd come off stage and somebody would start hassling you or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, I get that sometimes because, you know, but I don't blame people. You know, people are just very conditioned in their way of thinking. I'm just used to it now. And I really try to just be patient and not... I try not to just have an attitude of like, you know, I know everything. You are a, you know, ignorant person who was brought up in a society that brainwashed you. You know, I try not to come out. I started out like that, really. I kind of was just like an in-your-face attitude. But I've learned to just kind of be more patient and just I try to plant a seed of knowledge that can grow in their mind instead of forcing my opinion on them immediately. You know, I try to just kind of plant one seed to make them question maybe the way that they've been thinking through a conditioned thought pattern, and let that seed grow hopefully into something bigger.
That's what encouraging is about. It very much is the whole idea of being a gardener. You know, you plant your seed, and you plant it in a place where it actually might grow. You know, you don't toss the seed on a rock. You know, that's kind of what I found is very interesting, is picking and choosing your battles, because there's some people you're just not going to have much success right there at that particular point, right? They're too ad hominem. They start calling you names and what have you. It's kind of like attempting to argue with your worst self.
Yeah, and that's when you know that they're kind of more reacting out of emotion and anger by calling you names and kind of like empty pejoratives and stuff like that. It's just, it's kind of, you know, at that point that it's more their mind, ego getting involved and not letting the facts or information or the truth guide their mind or the conversation. And that's also when I'm in that situation, if I feel that kind of like anger or like I'm just trying to defend myself or my mind's point of view, I try to just calm down and just and let the truth come out instead of lowering my frequency to that level of kind of argumentative conversation that won't yield the results of anything productive.
Well, the whole idea of being productive, and I think it's like you've got to have something to show for it. So let's say, for instance, today after the show, I feel that I've been productive for today's workday because I've got 2 hours of content to upload to the website, right? I mean, how many other people can come home and claim anything remotely similar to have either a song or a video or a radio show or those kind of things? And this is just an immediate context of the word, because there's many, many other types of achievements and accomplishments and things that you can verify and say, yep, that's there, that's mine, I made it. You know, a man could build a chair or a chicken house, whatever it might be, as long as you're producing something. That's what humanity is, I think, known for, is producing something that is more powerful than itself.
Definitely, yeah. I think creation is our nature. I think, you know, the we were created, and it's kind of like a cycle. We were created to be creators, and we're creating things that might develop a life of their own and create something new. And it's almost like an expansive system, and it's all one too. It's how, you know, just like I was saying, that like a seed grows into a tree, which produces fruit, which produces another seed. So it's like a cycle of creation like that. And I love the process. I'm obsessed with creation. It's great.
Yeah. What is it that makes you obsessed about creation? I was thinking about this the other day about narcissism, right? You know what narcissism is?
I do.
All right. Could you give us a bit of an explanation about what your narcissism is? Because I was thinking about this last night, and I want to actually share something with you, Joe. I didn't know who I wanted to share it with entirely, but this was interesting. The Hodgkin Seven Deadly Sins of Narcissism: shamelessness, magical thinking, arrogance, envy, entitlement, exploitation, bad boundaries. And I was just thinking about this. These are the things you actually are almost required to have if you want to be a successful artist, entrepreneur, patriot, activist, all of these things. You need to be completely shameless in your promotion of the truth. Your magical thinking allows you to do things even when you've lost all hope. Your arrogance allows you to maintain confidence in conversations with other people that are attacking your persona. Your envy makes you lust after freedom that was once gone. Your sense of entitlement makes you feel that your rights are yours and yours alone and nobody can take them away. Your exploitation is how you use other people in order to help them help you and help each other in all the mystical ways around that you can do. Okay, I'm a remarkably exploitative person. Right now I'm exploiting you, Jay, for your knowledge and discernment and your experience in the media game and all of that kind of stuff. And also bad boundaries. We have no boundaries because we think that anything is possible. The whole idea of narcissism as a mental disorder, I think, might have in fact been created so that they might be able to ensnare people into thinking that being who they are is an unhealthy mental disorder. However, there are narcissistic personalities that are attached to psychopathy, for instance. Not all narcissists are psychopaths, but all psychopaths are narcissists. And all of these things that I showed here, that a patriot or somebody of conscience would use those abilities and those personality traits for good, would instead be flipped on their end, as it were, in a very Luciferian way, of course, and do the direct opposite of all those positive things that, say, somebody who has a conscience would do it with. I'm not sure what kind of a point I'm trying to make here, but I sort of looked at these things last night. It freaked me out because I saw a remarkable similarity with myself. And then I messaged my friend Thomas Sheridan, who's an expert on psychopaths, and I asked him about this. And he said, it's like Alcoholics Anonymous. According to their list of symptoms, everybody's an alcoholic.
That is very interesting. And I think everyone possesses those qualities. And just as you were speaking, I kind of thought of the movie, The Book of Eli. I don't know if you saw that, but it's about how, like, you know, there's the Bible and some people can take it and interpret it and use it for good. And then some people can take it and use it for bad. So I don't know. I think it might be the same kind of concept. It's like, you know, the narcissistic qualities exist. We can't deny that. We can't get rid of it. And I guess it's just a matter of what do you do with those qualities? Are you going to use it? It's the same kind of thing as fear. Fear can be used to control your life and take you off the path that you're supposed to be on and keep you from attaining or achieving your highest potential. Or it can be used as a motivator to take you right there to your highest potential. So I don't know. It's interesting how one thing can be flipped. It almost seems like it exists universally. Any concept, you can take it and use it for good or bad. You know, it's just like hip hop. I could take it and use it to try to spread truth and try to shake people out of their social coma, or I could use it to bring people deeper into their social coma and deeper.
You know what I think you should do, Jay? You should like use your hip hop in order to get yourself some bling.
Yeah, that would be original, huh?
Yeah. You know, I don't know. Maybe NWA styles, you know, like a giant clock hanging around your neck or something. Something overarching, and the clock will have like some gargantuan all-seeing eye pyramid that's flipped upside down as the juice is being squeezed out of the eye as all the people that make up the pyramid crush it on the ground, that kind of thing, on the face of the clock. With some nice, beautiful, artificially Russian created diamonds that you can just create anywhere that are perfectly good diamonds and what have you, that you didn't have to kill 7,000 Africans for and so on and so forth. I love the idea of being the antithesis to scumbag in every sense of the word. It's quite fun. And that's how you get the enjoyment out of life, by being the opposite of everything that you hate, because then you automatically embody and become all the things that you love and get surrounded by all those other people and all those things that you love too. You know, how does a magnet work? We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
But I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me? Am I legible? It's time to get down to the question of eventually will the corruption in the government lead to the collapse of us? Lead to the collapse of us. Lead to the collapse of us. Lead to the collapse of us. Right and left are symmetrical on the puppet master's tentacles. The two sides are identical. The troops are not ejectable. They're forming a prodigy and making the Jordan come out of me. It's like recording Nostradamus, taking a tour in the prophecy. The real American gangsters make the poor live in poverty, with the corporate dictatorship in a foreign economy. Give to the orphans on TV, cause a good portion of a lot of these starving children died in the name of a corporate monopoly. And the reporter reports it as if the story's a comedy. So I says the economy's so depressed, someone give this thing a Prozac, right? I'm ignoring hypocrisy like the war isn't happening. Like Guantanamo Bay has a real reason for torturing half of these terrorists, as they used to call patriots who supported the colonies. Reforming fiscal policy, support the philosophy that there's criminals purposely fighting America's dwarfing economy. What sort of a genre is he? Cause I'm more into R&B. I'll just have to keep it a secret like when I'm exploring eHarmony. We'll match you on 29 dimensions of compatibility. Of course no chorus is happening. I'm just sort of forming analogies. Straight torch on the track like a Porsche, but it might transform into a time machine. Back to the Future action scene, but George Orwell is casting me. Wave goodbye to democracy as they invade my private property with no warrants, cause the warrant alert level turned up to orange, you know what I mean? He just rhymed orange, rewind it, geez, I never knew it could rhyme with so many things. Morning is orange at 4 in the morning, according to corporate importance, I'm fortune ignoring the Morgan's extortion, and you're getting poorer the more that they're hoarding the fortune. Jay Soli, Jay Soli, Jay Soli.
Jay Soli, Jay Soli, indeed. Yeah, kicking it, banking it. We weren't able to play any of the tracks from your new album, but that track there is called New World Odor. And I have had that as one of the intro tracks to this show since you came on like a year and a half ago, bro.
That is sick, man. I appreciate the publicity.
Well, you know, I got Genocide on there as well. You know Genocide. Yeah. And it's just like you two, as far as young New World Order rappers and stuff like that, you know, making some sick lyrics and rhymes and that kind of stuff. It's like you see all these other hip-hop artists, and you see them on these mainstream sort of hip-hop channels where it's just the same crap over and over and over again. It's making hip-hop, R&B, and almost every form of creativity that once came out of that sort of genre into crap. Meaningless, pathetic, slimy crap that had no meaning, no relevance, isn't cool anymore, and for goodness sake, it needs to fracking stop. And the only way you can really stop things that really, really suck is if you come up with something that's really, really awesome to oppose it and support it in any way you can. You know what I'm saying, man?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. It gets so repetitive and so dumbed down. I mean, me and some of my friends, like, we're kind of like joking. It seems like it's a competition to see who can make the absolute worst, most elementary, most repetitive, annoying stuff that you can possibly come up with. Because some of this stuff, it was bad. The mainstream stuff was bad 10 years ago, but it's getting worse. And it's like, it literally gives me a headache. I can't even fathom why people would listen to it. It's beyond, I can't even understand, you know?
That's what's happening now. And it's a shame, because how much potential have we got? Let's say human potential. Let's say you had millions and millions of dollars at your disposal, like, say, I don't know, Nicki Minaj does or whatever. Now, Nicki may be busting her hump and working just like every artist who does get up there, but the fact of the matter is she wouldn't be getting pushed if she was saying something that was real.
Definitely, yeah, and that brings up a good point, too. You know, it's just like every other industry, whether it's media, the news, or politics or whatever. It's all getting consolidated into a smaller and smaller group of people who have the power. And really, you know, basically one, you know, Viacom or, you know, whatever, the big guys own 85% of the music industry. So that leaves 15% of independents, which there's so many out there, to try to scramble to get their piece. And then even when one of them starts making noise, one of the big guys will come and take them and offer them, you know, an offer they can't refuse. But what that process is it's literally, the internet has changed this a little bit, but it's cutting the progression of art itself. Because, like, on the radio, I've heard something like three notes can make up every pop song that you hear on the radio. And it's because they don't want to take a risk. They'll say, okay, this worked before, and we're going to go ahead and it's going to work again. We're not going to take a risk and lose money. We're going to do something that we know works. So they just keep putting out the same garbage over and over and over, and there's no progression that ends up happening. And it makes me wonder, it's like, what if it wasn't for money running not only the music industry, but, you know, if there
was every industry,
every single industry, what if there was just that free flow of information and that real organic growth that nature intends for every aspect, including education, let's say? Like, what if there wasn't that, all those lies in the education system, and people were really taught true things, maybe about their infinite nature or spirituality or something, you know, let the progression keep going and growing upon itself. And it makes me wonder where we'd be as a human species right now if it wasn't for that hindrance of our development.
Well, I think dollar for dollar, the independent media is 17 times more effective than the mainstream media, you know, or whatever. Something extraordinary. Because, hey, we don't need a hell of a lot, do we? I mean, when was the last time you paid $5,000 an hour to be in a professional recording studio, Jay?
Never.
And do your songs sound like freaking awesome anyway?
Yep.
Then they're wasting $5,000 an hour.
Right.
You're squandering. Okay? That's why these industries are falling apart at the seams. Because their compliance costs, their running costs, and everything have just gone way through the roof. Technology has now allowed us to be a big record label with a with a computer and a few snazzy devices and recording pieces of equipment, you know, maybe like $10,000 rather than $5,000 an hour. And in total, gives you the ability to record infinite songs.
Definitely, yeah. And some people think that that's a bad thing. Some people think that that just makes for way too many people to allow them to just make noise and all that. But I think it's actually a good thing. I think it's kind of, I think nature has a way of, you know, burning down its forest to create something new. And I think it just kind of resets everything back to a time when everyone did make music. And it wasn't about, I don't know, it wasn't about anything besides just making the music and having a love for that creation. And I think it's maybe a good thing that artists, most of them are, maybe getting a little less money or something like that, because it just weeds out the people who are in it for that reason, and it leaves people who really love, really just have a love for creating their craft.
And at the end of the day, anybody who starts saying, oh, well, you know, not everybody should be able to record and make music and stuff like that, and I go, who gets to say who should and who shouldn't be able to make their own music?
Right.
Okay. Frack you. You know, what a swangler. You know, it's a cross between swine and Joseph Mengele.
Who says the Pakihachis can't come out with an album, right?
Yeah. Well, in fact, that's what we're doing right now, Jay, is me and my mate Mikhail, we're just kind of like, we stay up kind of like all night. The other night when we made this rap song that I sent you, I think we kind of looked at the clock and it was like, oh my God, it's 5 to 6 a.m. Oh, no.
That's when you know you love it, man. It's when you forget what time it is, you forget to eat, that's what's up.
Yeah, and I was starving, and I forgot to drink water as well. You know, it's just, jump, boom. That's actually the whole thing. Ladies and gentlemen, there is an earthly need for your body to eat, sleep, drink, have praise, etc. If you're so busy and absorbed doing something that makes you forget all those basic things, then that thing is probably worth doing. Unless it's crack cocaine. Thank you very much, Jay, for coming on the show with us today. And if you have a website, now would be the time to fire it out.
Yeah, www.jsolli.com, just J the letter, SOLLI.com, man. And then check out that album, So Ill, on iTunes and Spotify right now. And I really appreciate you having me on, man. It's been good talking to you again.
That's cool, man. And if you want to hang around for another 15 minutes after the show, we have a social network chat with the listeners that are in the a chat room on Skype. So that they'll be able to ask you a few questions and or vice versa.
Definitely, yeah.
All right, cool. Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, very much for listening. The archives will be posted at a number of different places. We'll have the Vinny Eastwood Show.com. That's Vinny with a Y. This is the most important question. GorillaMedia.co.nz. That's gorilla like a soldier, not like a large hairy ape. That's my job. And also, the YouTube version will be uploaded to the YouTube channel, Mr. News Gorilla Media. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. And also, we are moving house in a day or two. So if you are listening to the live broadcast, please donate or visit the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. There is a bank account number and PayPal thingy there as well. Thank you very much for all your support, ladies and gentlemen. We literally could not do any of this without you, your suggestions, and all your help and participation. We'll see you again sometime.